This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 133 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. If you listened to last week's show on regression candidates, then understanding what we're going to be talking through today should be pretty easy. If you haven't, then stop this podcast and go listen to episode 131 to get a quick intro on what regression is all about, because that's very important in understanding today's show. But today, we're going to look at the opposite side of the spectrum. While I analyze players who appear to have overperformed on the gridiron in 2017 on last week's show, on this one, we're going to look at guys who underperformed. Really, we're just going to look at players who should have been doing more for your fantasy football rosters. The guys who may have just been a little unlucky last year. And that misfortune was then passed on to you, the fantasy football owner. And then you had multiple shower cries as a result of it. And just to reiterate, the process in examining these players and instances isn't to tell you that you should just go out and buy them this year. Sometimes the average draft position for positive regression candidates is totally normal and fine and justified. I'll explain when that's the case, but each of these players is unique. There's no blanket way in analyzing regression, and there's no golden key that unlocks all of the answers to football and fantasy football. The reason I'm doing these regression podcasts is to explain how performances can fluctuate and how to potentially find overall market inefficiencies in fantasy football. So with that being said, let's look at the first 2017 underperformer. And that's everyone's favorite volume wide receiver who doesn't score touchdowns, Julio Jones. All right, so let's just cut to it. Last year, Julio Jones had the 21st highest receiving yardage total seen by a wide receiver over the last seven seasons. In 2017 alone, only Antonio Brown had more receiving yards. Antonio Brown, though, scored 9 touchdowns. Julio Jones scored 3. As I noted last week, there's a decent correlation between yards and touchdowns. And again, that shouldn't surprise any of you, given you know that you need to accumulate yards in order to score touchdowns. Of course, there will always be players at either end of this yards to touchdown spectrum. Some dudes aren't heavily utilized close to the goal line, for instance, while others are only used at the goal line. But we're looking at trends. And an easy way to spot touchdown regression, like I said last week, is to look at how many touchdowns a player scored versus the number of yards that he accumulated. For Julio Jones last year, it was 3 receiving touchdowns on 1,444 yards. Over the last 7 years, so since 2011, 1,444 yards on average has yielded nearly 9 touchdowns for a wide receiver, meaning Julio Jones underperformed in the touchdown column by almost 6 scores. It was 5.7 to be exact. Now, a lot of you listening to this right now might say, well, yeah, but Julio Jones is always bad at scoring touchdowns. And that's not entirely wrong. Since Julio Jones entered the league, he's overperformed in the touchdown column when looking at average yards per touchdown at wide receiver in just 2 seasons, which came in 2011 and 2012. Overall, throughout his career, Julio should have scored 11 or 12 more touchdowns than he has. That's roughly 1.6 touchdowns missed out on per season. But no season was like 2017, where, to echo what I just said, he scored 5.7 fewer touchdowns than he should have scored. His second worst season in touchdowns versus expectations based on yards came in 2014. He scored 6 times, but he should have had 9.55 touchdowns. So what's this all mean? Well, what's interesting about last year is that he was still getting looks close to the end zone. He had 19 red zone targets, which was the third highest mark of his career, and he had 11 targets within the opponent's 10-yard line, which was the second highest. He just happened to score only once in the red zone, which is something that he's done only one other time in the NFL, and that happened in 2013 when he only played 5 games. I'm fully expecting Jones to bounce back, and he should see about 6 to 8 touchdowns this year as long as he's healthy. He's a very obvious positive regression candidate. I've talked about this a little bit on the podcast this offseason, but the Saints passing attack as a whole is due for some positive regression as well. Last season, New Orleans was one of 4 teams who had as many rushing touchdowns as they did passing touchdowns. They scored 46 total times, which was actually a 7-year low for the Saints. But from 2011 through 2016, so the 6 seasons prior to last year, that 1.0 passing touchdown to rushing touchdown ratio had never been lower than 2, meaning the Saints had always had double the amount of passing touchdowns than rushing touchdowns. Yes, personnel is dictating their move to be more run-heavy, but that doesn't mean that they've got to be one of the most run-friendly squads at scoring touchdowns in the league now. We should assume that number should regress a bit. And we should expect the same with their overall pass-to-run ratio. That went from never dipping below 1.62 from 2013 through 2016 to ending at 1.21 last season. Again, I don't think we need to assume that we're going to see this pass-happy Saints again, but I would guess that we see a slightly more pass-friendly team than we did last year. And guys, Drew Brees is still good. I know he wasn't as good as he normally is for fantasy football last season, but his 7.71 adjusted net yards per attempt rate was the fourth best of his whole freaking career. Let's slow down on this Drew Brees isn't good anymore garbage if that's what you're thinking right now. Naturally, with fewer passing touchdowns overall for the team, Brees' touchdown rate was lower than usual. He threw a touchdown on every 4.3% of his passes when his career average is about 5.3%. Again, we're looking at some positive regression in that column. And that had an impact on his receivers too. Michael Thomas finished last season with 5 touchdowns, but he had 1,245 yards. Only 8 wide receivers ranked higher in the should have more touchdowns column when looking at yards versus touchdowns. So while Thomas may not see as high of a target share this year, this is why I'm still bullish on him. The Saints should be more pass heavy and they should score more passing touchdowns. That means that Michael Thomas is in store for another big season. And if Drew Brees falls in your draft for whatever reason, I love Drew Brees too. When looking at what's actually happening with a player and what the fantasy football market is doing, Jimmy Garoppolo is one of the craziest players that I've ever analyzed. Everyone wants him, as shown by his QB8 price tag on fantasyfootballcalculator.com. But when you remove the name and what he did for the 49ers last year, his ADP is kind of surprising. Because in his 5 starts last year, Jimmy G threw 6 touchdown passes. His touchdown rate last year was just 3.9%. That means that entering this year, if we were talking about any other ordinary quarterback, we probably would have expected the fantasy football world to value him like any other late round passer. But people are buying into the potential of Jimmy Garoppolo and sort of ignoring what he did in the touchdown column last year. And I can't say that disregarding the number of touchdowns that Jimmy G had last season is a terrible idea, because he's a positive regression candidate as a result of how many touchdowns he threw a season ago. It's just that you're not gaining any advantage through the positive regression, whereas you can often do that with other players. Like when you walk through these regression exercises, like I said earlier, it's a way to spot inefficiencies because fantasy football owners tend to look at last season's statistics and use them to determine how good or bad a player will be in the current year. But that's not happening at all with Jimmy Garoppolo. So while I love me some Jimmy G and I think that he's going to be solid this season and beyond, I'm definitely not going to be owning him in redraft leagues only because of the hype. But he is absolutely a positive regression candidate for this season. People hate Lamar Miller. He seems to always underperform. But for what it's worth, Miller's actually just one of 2 running backs with 1,200 or more yards from scrimmage in each of the last 4 seasons. The only other running back is Frank Gore. And last year when Deshaun Watson started, so 6 games overall, Miller finished as at least an RB2 in 5 of those 6 contests, and he ranked in the top 5 in weekly scoring in 2 of them. Lamar Miller probably isn't that bad of a fantasy asset as you think. He had 6 touchdowns last year, but based on his rushing and receiving yardage totals, that number should have been closer to 7 or 8. So that's why he's on today's podcast and why I'm talking about him. But naturally, since the Texans were far better offensively with Deshaun Watson than without him, Miller scored 4 of his 6 touchdowns during that 6-game stretch. So not only should he have been better overall from a fantasy perspective last year, but he may be able to do just a little bit better in the touchdown department if his offense is able to keep things going this season. Miller doesn't necessarily have crazy upside. I totally get it. But if you're going wide receiver early, he's not a bad pick this year. I did that one mock draft for NFL.com a few weeks ago, and I got Adam Thielen at the 2-3 turn after taking Le'Veon Bell first overall. I then shared the mock draft on Twitter, and a few people were really down on that Adam Thielen pick. And that's totally fine. People aren't going to agree with every single decision that I make, let alone a decision that I made in a mock draft. But I'm still into Adam Thielen this season. The distribution between Thielen and teammate Stephon Diggs could easily differ considering there's a new quarterback under center for the Vikings this year. But it's easy to forget that Adam Thielen averaged over 2 targets more per game than Stephon Diggs last year. Thielen just wasn't as good as he could have been from a fantasy perspective because the dude just couldn't find the end zone. He scored just 4 times last season, giving him one of the biggest should-have-scored discrepancies in all of football. Thielen actually didn't score a touchdown until his 8th game last year. I remember having him as a buy candidate in my 15 transactions column and podcast and just waiting for that touchdown to happen, and then it finally did. Thank God. Funny enough, he scored 4 touchdowns over his final 9 games, which prorates to 7.1 touchdowns on the season. And that's almost in line with the 7.65 touchdowns that we'd expect him to have given his 1,276 receiving yardage total. In other words, late season Thielen is more or less what we should expect, though perhaps we should see a slight dip in overall target share. That, to me, though, could be a reason that some people are down on him. His touchdown total in general should have been higher last season than it was. I think he's properly priced, though, for this season, for what it's worth. It's tough to say Adam Thielen should be higher than someone like Keenan Allen in fantasy football, but I think that he's right where he should be from an ADP perspective. Speaking of Keenan Allen, he's actually another player who scored fewer touchdowns than he should have last season. I don't want to beat a dead horse with that type of analysis, but Allen ended the season with 6 scores when he should have had closer to 8. Allen's a really interesting case, though, because he has some positive regression coming that's also being combated by recency bias. He had a great season last year, but he also went ham over the final 7 games, averaging 8.3 receptions, about 114 yards, and 0.7 touchdowns per game. To give you guys some context, during his first 9 games, Allen averaged 3.5 fewer receptions, 47 fewer yards, and 0.6 fewer touchdowns per contest. Like, Keenan Allen wasn't that great of a fantasy asset until week 10 last year. Maybe some of that was getting reacclimated to the game, and it's true that there was some natural positive regression that was going to eventually hit for Keenan Allen. But I do think that there's the chance that he's more volatile than some might think. His ADP is fine, though, just because you know that he has crazy upside, and the injury to Hunter Henry could give him more touchdown upside, which is very, very important. But it's definitely something to think about, because without that recency bias, without Keenan Allen's second half of the season, I think he'd be a much clearer value due to slight positive regression. Joe Mixon struggled a bit last year, and he didn't necessarily live up to his draft cost. And actually, at his average draft position, if you want me to be more specific, he actually underperformed by about 4 PPR points. But Mixon also had a poor yards per carry rate, and he finished the season roughly 0.48 yards per carry worse than his running back teammates. That was 17th worst out of the 73 running backs with 50 or more carries last year. The good news is that Mixon actually had a better success rate than teammate Giovanni Bernard last year, which measures the percentage of positive expected points runs made by a running back. It measures whether a run was a success or not, and gives us this look at how consistent a running back was. That means his overall efficiency may have been caused by a lack of big plays. And when you dig in, that actually makes sense for Joe Mixon. While 34 of those 73 running backs that I mentioned with 50 or more carries were able to see 10% or more of their runs go for 10 or more yards, Mixon didn't. Fewer than 10% of his rushes went for 10 plus yards. And get this, only 1.1% of his rushes went for 20 plus yards, which ranked 54th of those 73 running backs. Compare that to Giovanni Bernard, who ranked 7th within the statistic. So that explains a lot of the discrepancy between Bengals running backs and yards per carry. And to be honest, I'm more into a player like Joe Mixon who showed consistency with a higher success rate than I am Giovanni Bernard, even if Giovanni Bernard had better efficiency marks last year. Because one of those things is just generally more sustainable than the other. So we should really expect some sort of jump from Mixon in big plays, but another reason to be a little bit more bullish on him this year statistically is that he didn't find the end zone through the air despite almost 300 receiving yards last year. And he also only scored on about 16% of his carries within the 10-yard line, which was one of the lower rates among running backs last season. Mixon will naturally be a little bit better this year, and then when you factor in things like the Bengals' offensive line being stronger, he should be in store for a great season. The last rebound candidate this year that I want to talk through is a team and not necessarily just an individual player, but it's the Titans' passing attack. Like the Saints, the Titans had just as many rushing touchdowns as passing touchdowns last year, but actually, they had 4 fewer passing touchdowns than rushing touchdowns. Their passing touchdown to rushing touchdown ratio last year tied for the 4th lowest that we've seen over the last 5 seasons. Of the 5 non-Titans teams that have had a pass-to-rush touchdown ratio lower than 1 over the last 5 years, each team had a higher ratio the following season. And it was by a lot, too, as none of them had a ratio the following season that was lower than 1.33. Marcus Mariota is going to be better in 2018 than he was in 2017. During his rookie season 3 years ago, he had about a 5.1% touchdown rate. In 2016, he had a 5.8% touchdown rate. Both of those numbers are above the league's average, and that 2016 rate specifically was bound to regress. But last season, Mariota threw only 13 touchdowns on 453 attempts for a 2.9% touchdown rate. It's just another way of showing that regression in the passing attack is going to hit for the Titans, similar to how we looked at Drew Brees and the Saints. So which pass catcher should benefit the most? Well, I think it could be Delanie Walker, who finished 2nd in the should-have-more touchdowns when looking at receiving yardage at the tight end position last year. Number 1 on that list last season was Jared Cook, who scored just 2x on nearly 700 yards. But with Walker, he had just 3 touchdowns while seeing over 22% of the team's targets. He had 111 targets and scored just three freaking times. But because the team didn't throw many touchdowns, his touchdown share overall was still at the same place that we've seen since he's become a Titan. It starts at the team level for the Titans, and it should have a trickle-down effect. And that means that I'm probably going to be more into the Tennessee passing attack this year than most people will. Like I said last week, hopefully the individual examples that I talk through are helpful for your drafts, but really I wanted to walk through these examples to show how you can spot regression on the positive end to see which players underperformed last year, because it really can go a long way in finding edges in your fantasy football league. But that's it for today's show. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure that you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And when you're on iTunes, if you could do me a solid and leave me a rating and review, it'd be greatly, greatly appreciated. I'm also on Twitter. You can find me at LateRoundQB. Feel free to hit me up on there if you have any questions for Friday's mailbag show, or email me at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you later in the week.